I serve as the president of Josiah Venture. I'll tell you a few things about that. And I've been in kind of organizational leadership and mission leadership all my life. So this is, I'm so glad I get to be with you and talk about these subjects, because these subjects of team building and organizational leadership are really close to my heart. And let me just tell you something about what we do so that you have a context. So Josiah Venture, our vision is a movement of God among the youth of Central and Eastern Europe that finds its home in the local church and transforms society. I spend my days thinking about young people, how to reach them, about young leaders, how to train them in disciple making. And our vision is to see churches full of young people across the region. And then mission, which of course talks about what you do to fulfill it, to equip young leaders to fulfill Christ's commission through the local church. So when God puts a vision on your heart, it kind of burns there. And you have various visions maybe for the youth of Georgia or for your church or for leadership training in Italy, these different things. And then you go out to start to do that and you wonder, how in the world am I going to be able to accomplish it, right? So here is when my wife and I moved to the Czech Republic. We moved to this town, it's about an hour from here, called Havijov, that means the town of miners. Beautiful city, isn't it? Peter lives not very far from there in Olomouc.
I haven't changed a bit.
Hasn't changed a bit. there's my wife and our two kids. Though there we are. We've got this great vision, this great mission. How in the world are we going to accomplish it? This is how I looked on. You can see a little bit younger version of me. And then someone had to welcome us there had put on the door, "Welcome to the world where dreams come true." That's written. Look at that door. It doesn't really look like a dream's coming true anywhere near that door. So you have these dreams and you hope that they'll come true, but then how in the world do you accomplish them? So we got involved in a local church. Here's a small local church, one of just a couple in a town of 100,000, about 60 people there. And I went to the first youth group meeting and there were five of us sitting around the table. And the youngest, I want to work with the young people in the church, and the youngest was 21. And the oldest in the youth group was 70, because he'd lost his wife and he was single again, so he felt like he belonged to the other singles. So I'm looking at this town of 100,000, this little bitty church, this little bitty youth group. How in the world are we going to accomplish anything? And sometimes you'll feel that way, that your vision is much bigger than your resources. What you want to do seems impossible and seems like you can't accomplish it. So one of the things I started praying for is a team. Now, sometimes you think, well, maybe we've got to build the ministry first and then build the team. But actually, you can't really build the ministry without the team, right? So here is our first team, our team in this local. We actually had to borrow some people from a couple other churches to accomplish the vision. But kind of an interesting team, older people, younger people, some of my kids, some of someone else's kids. It's kind of a ragtag group. But as that team began to work together to accomplish that vision, instead of just one person, and they were all volunteers, well, pretty soon, this is what our youth group looked like. So all of a sudden, the church was full of young people, people coming to Christ, and we actually had more youth than the rest of the church, but it was only accomplished because God built a team. It wouldn't have been accomplished. And that's part of it, that vision that you have on your heart, central to accomplishing that vision will be building a team. Sometimes it's a team of volunteers, like I showed you here. And the great thing is then people start trusting Christ and putting their faith in him, which was just super fun and exciting. Now, also, we started with a staff team that was huge. There's our staff team and our first staff meeting. So we had to have someone take the picture. So I gave it to my about five-year-old son at that point. And the camera was too heavy, so he couldn't pull it up all the way. So we're all bending down to make sure we're in the picture because our photographer is 5 years old. And so that's our team right there and our first team meeting. And there's our team meeting room. It looks great, doesn't it? A little messy. Oh, you got to get the baby in the picture too. Now, what's interesting is those two over on the right, we're still serving with them today. So we've served a long time with dear friends. And it actually was a great team. It worked. We loved each other. We worked together. And that team started to grow. And pretty soon, as we began to train other churches and train other leaders, God began bringing full-time people on our team, which was just really amazing. So here's our several years later, our full-time team. Well, you can accomplish much more when you've got a team like that, like of different gifts and time and energy. And then there was, you started getting more young people on that team. So you can see some of those were working part-time with us or serving as internships, but you could see kind of that fresh energy in those faces. And then the ministry began to expand to other countries. Josiah mentioned right now is working in 16 countries of Central and Eastern Europe. The ministry began 28 years ago, and this is what our team looks like today. So we have 350 full-time staff working in those 16 countries. So I just want to show you from a small vision and a really small team with a great photographer that couldn't hold the camera up all the way and a bunch of volunteers that this is what God has accomplished over 28 years. But central to, and I could tell you great stories of what these guys are doing all over the region, just amazing things. Actually, the testimony you heard last night from Michał, he's one of our team members here in Poland. Building and caring for a team has actually been central to accomplishing the vision that God laid on our heart. So sometimes you think, here's this vision. Oh, yeah. Actually, you're not going to accomplish a vision that God laid on your heart without learning how to build a team and increasing your resources. So I want to tell you some of the lessons that God is still teaching me, because building a team of this size is a totally different kind of animal. Maintaining them is successful. I want to talk about some of the lessons God's taught along the way that can work when you have two on your staff, like in Georgia, or when you have larger teams of 11, 12, or maybe even, could God expand your team? Could you have 80 on your team someday? Would that even be possible, or 100? Could that be possible? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And we'll start with the leader's wish. So all of your leaders. And if you talk to a leader and say, what do you really wish? What do you wish? I wish I had. What would you say? I wish I had
more staff.
Yeah, what we could accomplish with more staff. Yeah, I wish I had
money.
I wish I had more money, right? What we could get done if we had more money. We could maybe hire some more staff or get a building or get space or something like that, or do a conference. I wish I had what?
Time.
I wish I had more time. Wouldn't it be great if you had more time? Wow, there's so many things I'd love to do if I had more time. I wish I had any other things you wish you had more?
More wisdom, less.
I was still going more, not so. Yeah, less problems, more wisdom. Anything else?
Connections.
Yeah.
More responsive audience.
Yeah, the more responsive audience. Yeah, all these are better staff. I wish I had better staff. You know, the one I, in all these things, you wish more. The other one that I wish I had is I wish I had more energy. I work for a while and then I run out. Like, wouldn't it be great if, no, it wouldn't be great, but if we just work 24 hours, just keep going, that wasted 8 hours that I, or 6 hours that I need to sleep. So here we go. We have, this is typically the leader's wish. We could grow, our ministry could grow, we could accomplish more if I just had more time, if I just had more energy, if I just had more people, if I just had more money. These are really typical. But as you look at those four, time is bound. You're not going to get much more time. Maybe push a little bit. Energy, you can maybe exercise, eat right, get a little bit more energy. Money, okay, maybe, right? But actually, your people resources are the most important of all. Because if you have good people resources, you actually can. Sometimes we think if I had more money, I could get good people. Actually, if you have good people, you'll actually get more money. So the resource of all of this that's the most precious, because if there's one more person on my team, we double our time and energy. And we also increase our possibility of generating resources. And so all of these others actually are most impacted by your people resources. And so of all your resources, your people resources are your most precious. And that's what you need to remember as a leader, is your people resources. You can see your building or your curriculum or your program or your plans. Your people resources are your most precious of all. So this means that, let me see if I can get my, this actually is let's turn to Matthew 9. So this is what Jesus recognized. And you know this passage, but I want to look at it. So Matthew chapter 9. We'll start in verse 35. Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every disease or affliction. We saw the crowds. Well, I bet there were crowds, because we're talking about the cities and villages, and there are a lot of people that have disease and affliction. He had compassion on them. He let his heart be moved because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And so then he decided to work more hours in his day, skip some sleep, try to get more people in the room, it's out on the hill. No, he says, then he did something. When he saw the lack of other things, he said, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. He says, therefore pray earnestly the Lord of harvest to send out laborers in his harvest field. So what he focuses on is he actually focuses on increasing his people resources as he sees this overwhelming need. Now, some people say, okay, I'm going to close down my heart. I don't want to see those needs. Or I'm going to visit less villages. But he actually says, how can our people resources be increased? And he begins with prayer. So that's actually where we need to start. You know, pray. Actually, focus prayer about your people resources. Focus prayer about your team at the seminary or in YFC or in Georgia with IFES and these various places, or Revive. Pray about your team. Pray about your team. Focus in prayer. Ask God to increase your people resources. Pray about it, because it's actually spiritual work. But then often we don't realize that this chapter 10 is kind of breaking it up. He didn't just pray. Because then in chapter 10, verse 1, he says he called his 12 disciples and gave them authority over. So then he starts acting. There's things he starts doing. And one of the things I think we should do is we should study chapter 9 and pray. And then don't stop at chapter 9. Move on to chapter 10 and say, what did Jesus do to build his team? Because he did. I mean, he built an incredible team that within a generation changed the world. Well, how did he actually go about that? So what did he do? And we could look more at chapter 10, but there are some, here's just a couple of overall observations as we go in. So then we have chapter 10. Well, one of them is team building is one of your most important skills as a leader. So we often think, how do I develop my communication skills? How do I develop my organizational skills? How do I develop my planning skills? My email answering skills, because that always is pushing on. As a leader, you should always be thinking, how do I continue to increase my team building skills? This is just one of the most important things about expanding. A leader who builds his own capacity adds, but a leader who builds the capacity of his team multiplies. So you can say, and this is what often happens, is people continue to work on their own growth. I want to get that, but they don't work on the growth of their team. And your own growth will add, but the growth of your team will multiply. So you need to spend a lot of time thinking about how you can help the people on your team grow, because think about your own growth too, but think about their growth, because that's where you'll actually multiply. None of us is as smart as all of us, Ken Blanchard said. None of us, so no one person will be, if you have a good team, it will always outperform a genius individual. It just always will. Because none of us is as smart as all of us. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So sometimes it may seem slower at the beginning, but actually I believe it's faster in the long run. Teamwork is a fuel that allows common people to attain uncommon results. Andrew Carnegie said that. Talent wins games, but teamwork and intelligence wins championships. Michael Jordan. And he was an amazing basketball player. What you find if you go more is he actually was an unbelievable team motivator. And one of the reasons why they won the championships is because he was always not just thinking about his own performance, but how does he elevate the performance of the team? So that's one thing, is just you have to make it a priority. And that's why he says, pray earnestly. So you have this energy that's focused. So we need to, and you know, here's the thing, we get busy because that to-do list is just long, isn't it? There's so many things to do. And you open your computer and, oh, that email, this email, this, I don't have my ticket booked, I don't have this done, I don't have this done. And this is, team building is one of those things that will, you can always put off till tomorrow. You can always put it off. You got to answer that email today, but team building, and here's leaders who think about the future will reserve that time for team building, even though it can always be put off. They just put it in as one of those rocks that it just has to be there. It's your investment in the future. You know, it's like someone said, when's the best time to plant a tree? And the best time to plant a tree is yesterday. And the second best time to plant a tree is today. Because you know there'll be a lag time, and as you build a team, there's a lag time. You do a bunch of work today, a bunch of work tomorrow, and there's nothing to show for it. 3 months, 6 months from now, there is. And that's why we have to, the tyranny of the urgent, we have to continue to keep that big rock, guard that time and energy that we spend growing our team, growing our team and helping them grow. So you see that, and then you see Jesus in chapter 10. What does he do? Calls together 12. He gives them authority. He knows who they are, all their names. And then in verse 5, he instructs them, tells them what to do, what not to do, what to say. He prepares them for what they will face. He's thought about this. And, you know, he says, here are some of the rewards. And then this is, you don't see this in this passage, but when he sends out the 22, they come back. And it looks like he spent the whole time just sitting praying for them while they're out there. Because he says, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. So like he's working in the background to make them successful out on the front lines, which is just really, really crazy. So he makes it a priority. Now here's another key thing. New team members are not motivated by tasks that need to be done, but by vision that needs to be accomplished. So when you think about your team, you see some things that really need to be done. Wow, more IFES workers on your team in Belarus, and you can see it. Or maybe you're saying, you know, if I had an assistant who would just answer my email, that would just be fabulous. Or what we really need, our technical stuff is not working. We need a good sound person on our team, maybe even as a volunteer, to keep the technical things working. And what you do is you think of tasks that need to be accomplished, and then you look for people who know how to do those tasks, right? I need another teacher. Where do I find another teacher? So tasks that need to be accomplished and people that need to do those tasks. And then we go to those people and we say, you know what? Our sound system's not running really well. I've heard that you're good at sound systems. Would you please run our sound system for us? Or we just don't have enough staff to pull off this event. If someone comes to you like that, how do you respond? Right. You don't have time for that. Right. Because you don't.
Other things to do.
You
sound like my church.
What's that?
You sound like my church.
Yeah, right. And it's just, here are all these needs. Come on. Which of you are going to do those things? Do you know how to do that? Well, then, would you do that? And what you'll always find is you'll find.
I'm so strong. I just know that I can tell.
What? So it's, yeah. No, I'm saying.
Wait.
I'm saying this is what we do. I'm saying we should do it differently. I'll show you. I'll tell you in a minute. Yeah, what we should do. This is what's natural to do. Here's something that needs to be done. Who knows how to do it? Would you please come and do this thing? And if you're on the other end of that, now if you're the leader, this makes total sense. This is missing. Who's someone who knows how to do what's missing? Would you please come and do what's missing? If you're the one being challenged, you go, I'm busy. Well, I disappoint you. You actually will probably, if you do it, you probably will do it reluctantly. But this is, Jesus did it in a different way. So this is really interesting. Well, until the why question is answered, the price is always too high. So if you don't begin with why and what outcomes, we always often begin with what, you're not going to, so, you know, it's funny because I watch different leaders in our church, and some leaders, they'll say, nobody in our church will do anything. I keep trying to get people to do things, but I'm doing everything. Nobody in our church will help me. Nobody will do anything. And then there's other leaders in our church that have people just, whatever they're doing, there's people around them and the people follow them. And like one of them, his name is Boja. And if you ask him to do something, you say, would you pull five people together to do these? He says, yeah, no problem. And they're all five there and they're all happy. Now it's the same church, it's the same people. How come one of them, it feels like everyone runs from the other one? Well, part of it is how they go, how they talk to those people. So this is how this person, the first one says, you know what? Listen, I'm having to run sound every week. And I mean, that's just not fair that all the weight should be on me. We need some help. We need to spread this around. There's a lot of people sitting around in our church and they aren't doing anything. Okay, and people run from that. But what did Jesus do? He actually started with the why question. And so let's look at Matthew 4:19. And actually, there's two things in here that are really fascinating. Matthew 4:19. So he's walking by the Sea of Galilee. In 18, he sees two brothers casting a net into the sea, and he says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Follow me because I'm really busy and I can't keep up with all my work and you could help me. Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. And actually, it's interesting that in this passage, the first vision he casts is the vision of their own growth. So sometimes we say, hey, can you do this? Okay, because if you can do this, we need this to be done. Or, hey, we have something here, an area where that might be super beneficial to you, because think how you could grow. I mean, you could learn to run sound. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to learn? You could become part of a team that's doing something amazing for God. So it's interesting that he actually challenged people into something that he felt like would benefit them. They would grow in it. You're going to become a fisher of men. And so as we recruit people, why? Why do you want to do this? Well, what a privilege to do this. I mean, who wouldn't want to serve with the IFES team? Who wouldn't want to be part of YFC in Georgia? What an opportunity to grow and to see God work. So you see, there's this vision, this why question. And the why usually involves two things. My growth and a worthy outcome. Something, my growth and a worthy outcome. You're going to be fishers of men. There are lost people out there that if you get involved in this, they're going to be found. They're going to have eternal life. And so we call people to their growth and a worthy outcome. And that's a totally different kind of vision statement. So that's one that's really, it's really amazing. Here's another one. Matthew 10, 5 through 8. Jesus is amazing at casting vision. And actually, there was one other one that I wanted there too, but we'll have, I think it's coming up. 12 sent instructing them, go out among the Gentiles, enter no town of Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and proclaim as you're saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. Wow, when you do this, it's going to result in the kingdom coming. The kingdom's going to be at hand. And sick people are going to get well, and darkness is going to be pushed back. And you know, we recruit by casting vision of outcomes. You know, this is what's going to happen. This is what we're praying, asking God for. So how did I get a team of six when the youth group was five? Well, part of it is I had to cast a vision of the future. This is what I believe God wants to do in our city. Lift our eyes to the harvest. This is what he's called us to do. Don't you want to be a part of this? So you have to paint a picture of what's not and invite people into that. The kingdom is at hand. And if you just say, hey, there's five people and we need some help, they're going to go, you don't need any help. There's just five people. But if you say, look forward into the future with me, can you see this room filled with 100? And you see out in that city, thousands of young people don't know Jesus. Would you like to be a part of reaching them? And seeing his kingdom come, well, then people sign up. They're willing to become involved. And then there's Acts 1:8 is also here. So you'll receive power. So again, that vision of who I'll become, like, wow, this is going to be exciting to be part of this. You'll receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you're going to be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the othermost part of the world. So you lead, you recruit with vision. Vision both for what will be accomplished and also for the amazing privilege of being a part of it and how you grow in the process. So we just, by the way, we just recruited someone to run sound in our church. And I was part of it. So I'll just tell you how I cast a vision. One of the things is we've actually been having really some problems with sounds not being taken care of well. You could start by saying, our sound's not taken care of well, and we need somebody to fix it, and we think you're good at sound. Would you do that? But instead, I started by saying, I think about how a service is impacted by sound. These people come in, and they come to meet with God, and then if they can't hear the words, they're distracted. If they can't hear the sounds, if they can't see the words, they're distracted, and then they walk away, and they haven't met with God. So actually, the sound team is such an important part of everything we're doing. The guy that speaks up front, maybe when you see him, but you can see him and hear him because of someone else. It's so important for what God's doing in our church. And the second is, did you ever notice who runs sounds? It's all these young guys. It's this 16-year-old, this 17-year-old, this 19-year-old. Well, these young guys actually are trying to figure out, do they really fit into this church? But if they're on the sound team and someone's shepherding them and caring for them, all of a sudden they have a place, and they come on Sunday morning and they go, I'm a part of this church because I'm running sound. You see how I'm painting a bigger picture of outcomes? And this guy said, well, I don't have much experience with sound. Yeah, isn't this a great opportunity to learn and grow? Like you could learn this. And you could even learn more about team leading, and wouldn't that be a benefit to you and to this church if you grew in that kind of a way? That's a totally different vision cast than nobody will do sound, will you? Because we need it done. Team building takes focus, time, energy, and attention. Now, we've already kind of said this. I just want to stress it again. This let's look at Matthew, Mark 3:14. So he went up to a mountain in 13 and called to him those he desired and came to them. And he appointed 12, and we know that he actually spent the night in prayer before he did this, which he named apostles so that they might be with him and he might send them out to preach. So a couple of things that are interesting here. Well, one is he spent the night in prayer before he did this. So there's this focused time thinking about it. And he actually called to those who he desired. So this wasn't just a, hey, we need somebody to run sound. You don't get your best leaders by asking for volunteers. You get your best leaders by carefully thinking about who you want to call and calling them by name, pulling them in. That's how you get the best ones. They say, crows fly in flocks, but eagles you have to hunt down one at a time. So you have Jesus praying, or, you know, what's on the Lord's heart. And then he goes to them. He says, well, Matthew, Simon. And so it's like this. But then it says he appointed 12 so that they might be with him. So it's not just so that they can, oh, I've got you. Now, would you go hurry up and do that work so I've got time for the other things that I'm not getting done? Because this is what we think when we gather a team. Oh, good, they'll take time off of my hands, and then I can do all the things that I haven't been doing that I want to do. But Jesus is actually going to spend a lot of his time investing in them. So he says that so that they might be with him. Just think of all the time Jesus spent being with that team, and some of it was frustrating, and there's long conversations, and they aren't doing anything they aren't accomplishing anything. Yeah, he's accomplishing the building of his team. And so sometimes we think about the work out there that we're doing, but we don't think about the work of building your team, which is work, which takes attention, it takes time, and you actually have to be with them and think about it and invest in them. And what's interesting is as a ministry grows, you'll spend more and more of your time building and caring for your team. In fact, I probably spend maybe 2/3 of my time right now building and caring for our team. They do the work. So I can feel like I'm not doing anything, you know? I mean, could I just leave them to do all the work? Because there's a bunch of things that I would love to do. So leaders, though, prioritize the time that needs to be spent in being with them, building into them, helping them grow, building that team, because it takes focus, time, and energy and attention, which often it's just really easy to do. Matthew 8. Also, you'll see, and so many times when you see Jesus had so much to do, and yet, so look at this, they had the baskets. seven baskets full. He's just fed 4,000. And immediately he got on the boat with his disciples. So he's always kind of doing these retreats with his team. Like, hey, guys, we got to get away. Just spend some time together. Well, wait, they're missing all those opportunities to heal people and preaching opportunities and things like that. So he's prioritizing time spent building into his team because he knows that that's where he's going to get multiplication. And let me see if there's another. Is not right? 8 through, it is because, Matthew 8. It's, you know what? It's, I was, you're right. Thank you. Wonder if Matthew 8 also relates to that. I was thinking Mark. You're right. It's not. Yeah, it's not Matthew. It's Mark. Mark 8, 8 through 11. So change that one. And the best teams are a healthy balance of gifts and abilities. When they come. This is also interesting when you look at Jesus' team. You have Simon the, what was Simon? Simon the zealot. And you have Matthew the tax collector. Okay, just think about this for a little bit. What's a zealot? This is a person who their very identity is, we got to kick out Rome and return the nation of Israel to its own rule. And they're zealous about this. This is their energy. That's their identity. What's Matthew? He's a tax collector. He works for the bad guys. And Jesus puts them both on his team. So sometimes we actually need different perspectives on our team. We need a balance of gifts. We don't want everyone to just be like us. So, you think about personalities, you've got Peter, who is the first to open his mouth and pull out his sword and take off somebody's ear and run to the tomb. And then you've got John, who they're having the supper, and what does he want to do? Just kind of lean up against Jesus. These are really different personalities, you know. John, let's just talk about love. And Peter, let's do something. And so he's got them both on his team. And this is one of the keys to team building is building a balanced team. The purpose of a team is to maximize everyone's strengths and render their weaknesses irrelevant. And here's a couple of tools that we use. If you want to get this, we use something called LiveStyle, which is a test that tests, it's a personality test that's done from a biblical perspective. And all of our team actually have done this test. You have to pay a little bit for each one. But one of the great things about this tool is you can actually put teams together. You can say these five people are working together, and it'll show you a graph and show you how their gifts match and where the holes are. It's really fascinating. So actually we have our entire 350 staff. I have their profiles from all of this. And when I go talk to them, I often look it up and go, oh, okay, they're this kind of a person. This is where their gifts are. And that really helps me when I'm talking to them. When I think about where should they be on the team, I also am always looking at that because God has made people in different ways. Or another one that's really interesting is 16 personalities, and that's in a number of different languages. It's kind of a easy version of the Myers-Briggs, and that's also a fascinating tool, and you can use that with your team and see how things fit together. A leader who cares for his team and creates a healthy team culture is a magnet for gifted and motivated people. They will actually try to find, could I be on your team? Could I maybe? Because it's so enriching to your life to serve on a team where you grow, you're doing something significant, and you love the people you're serving with. So that's what we want to create. So that's where you're going, yeah. Now, some people might say, well, then it's not about the work, it's about the people. Well, really, so God could say, God entrusts this work to do, because that's actually part of what gives life meaning. And we won't grow without doing the work. So, but the purpose is bigger than the work. But the work allows us to accomplish our purpose. So what I want to do is I want to get a lot done that's really significant in a way that makes people grow, and then we all have a great time together. And sometimes we put those against each other. Oh, we want people to grow, so don't get too much done. Wait, how are we going to? It's like saying, I want to have a great team, but let's not play any games and not win any games. How are we going to have a great team if we don't? Like, get out there, do it. Or I want to have good relationships, so, you know, let's not push on people to grow. Well, wait, isn't that part of good relationships? So don't put these things against each other, but say, we want excellent work. We want to do amazing things for God. And we want to grow in the process, and we want to enjoy each other along the way. So my dad was a farmer, and we grew up in the city, but he thought we should have been on a farm, so he made a farm in the city. So this is where, in Inglewood, where we were talking about, we had just vacant lots around our house, and we began gardening all of them, and ended up gardening about 4 acres, so about a hectare of land, all on land we didn't own in the city. And so we would sell vegetables. And so I worked really hard in the summer in the hot Colorado sun. But one time we were selling vegetables from our back porch, and one of the people came and they said, "Is it profitable to sell vegetables?" I said this to my dad. And he said, "Not really." "It was profitable to raise vegetables." He said, "Not really, but I'm not raising vegetables. I'm raising kids." Isn't that interesting? I'm not raising vegetables, I'm raising kids. But he raised vegetables to raise kids. See, it was important to raise vegetables because that's how he raised kids. And so God entrusts his kids with a lot of work, but his real love is for his kids. He wants to raise kids. And so if you say we're doing this noble work, we're caring for God's kingdom, and it's going to be a lot of work, but he's entrusted us to us, and really what he's doing is he's raising his kids. And we're all part of that. Do you see how that changes? Instead of somebody's got to hoe the corn, and these two have been hoeing the corn a lot more than you have, so you better get involved because we're overworked. So you're just lifting that more noble cause. And so a leader cares for his team and creates a healthy environment is a magnet for gifted and motivated people. So how do you create that magnet on your team? Sometimes I'm surprised at how strong this magnet is. I had a man visit us once who he was the CEO of a $1 billion bank in the United States. And then left that job and retired, and he was part of a church staff and came over to visit us. And I really clicked with this guy. His name was Jack. Really enjoyed him. We spent time together. We talked about the ministry, and he went home. And a little bit later, I called him up and I visited him and I called him up and I said, "Jack, I'm wondering if you would do something for us." And he said, "What?" And I said, "I'm wondering if you'd join the board." And he says, "Absolutely. Absolutely." He says, "Actually, I was wondering if you were going to ask me to join your staff." Jack, I mean, this guy's an amazing leader. And I said, "Really?" I said, "Well, yeah, but you can't learn another language and things like that. Why would you think I'd ask you to join our staff?" And he said, "Well, when I came home from visiting you, I told my wife, I hope Dave doesn't ask me to do something because I'm going to have to say yes." I said, "Really? Why?" And he said, "Well, for one thing, you're involved in something really significant. But the second thing is," and this is really interesting, he says, "I know if I was on your team, you would invest in me and take care of me." And he says, "I have not had that for the last 10 years. You're working under a really gifted leader who's really busy and loves to give his competent staff member this work and then forget about him because you're good. Go do this. So now I've got time to go do what I want." And his leader's not investing in him. And you might look like at a guy like Jack and go, "Jack, you don't need anybody to invest in you." Well, we all do, right? And we love it when someone thinks about us and thinks about our growth and puts us on a team and cares for us. He says, I'm glad you didn't ask me to join your staff because I don't know if I could have said no. You know, what would it be like if your team was a magnet like that where people said, "You want me to work with you? Could I? You can be that kind of magnet for gifted and motivated people. But it'll only happen if you care about their growth as much as you care about the outcome of your work. And there are three common paradigms, ways we think about team building that affect all the little decisions we make. First, there's forest leadership. And this is what forest leadership looks like. Oh man, God's doing some amazing things. Look at that tree grew and that grass grew and we're just out here trying to be safe, faithful to him, and maybe it'll rain today. Maybe we'll come across a bush with some berries and we can pick it. We'll kind of feed some birds and we might catch a rabbit and have something to eat tonight. Okay, so this is much more of a great trust in God, which we want, a great value for living things, but a sense that we can't and even shouldn't do too much about it because we would hurt that. And often this is pastoral leadership goes there. you know, when you start talking about maybe making, organizing, you know, like a flow chart or planning a year ahead. Wait, that's working with man's energy, because like that's depending on our plan, not on God. What we just need to do is wait on Him. Talk to somebody about some funds you need. No, we just, God will provide what He provides. And so this is kind of that kind of leadership, forest leadership. So a lot of people then from there go to a different paradigm, which is, oh, okay, that's not good. And they go to factory leadership. So here's some interesting things about, you could just think about this. How do you recruit new team members? Well, specify exactly what you want. Find someone who fits it. How do you equip them? Go through exactly what they're supposed to do. Teach them to do exactly what you're telling them. How do you care for them? Rewards, punishment, like if you get this done. Make sure that they have the right gear, helmet, things like that. How do you finance them? Well, you kind of finance them from what you sell, which is really interesting. It's the income from your product, which there's another way to finance, actually. But how do you solve problems on your team? Well, okay, we could talk more about that. Motivate, encourage them. So we're going fast now because she just gave me the 10 minutes. And there's a third kind, which is farm leadership, which is actually incorporates pieces of the other two, but actually is a totally different kind of paradigm. So we talked about numbers. Does the farmer use numbers? Yeah, he does. So sometimes we say numbers are bad. Numbers are automatically factory. Actually, the farmer uses numbers. Now, what is he counting, though? He's counting different things. He's counting fruit, yeah. So he's actually counting some things that are a little out of control, but he cares about. But he's tracking it. 99 sheep, one's missing, you know. So it's not just this forest. He's actually tracking things. But he cares about, but then you have the parable of the lost son, and you have him running, and you have all this emotion about this, because actually the things, that sheep is alive. That's different. I care about it. Maybe I know its name. The good shepherd calls out his sheep by name. It's different. So farm leadership, by the way, there's something there. It's actually the management of living things, which is purposeful engagement with that which is alive, which I have to follow the laws of life and realize that much is out of my control, but I can influence the environment and create optimal conditions for the things that are out of my control. So not everything is out of my control. The things that are in my control are really important, but actually God causes the growth. But I sow and water, but God causes the growth. So there's this amazing kind of, I study the laws of life and then try to work in concert with God. So I tend His garden, which is what we're supposed to do in Genesis, right? So that's the work we're supposed to do. We're tending God's garden. So when you're in leadership and you're working with a team, you're tending God's garden, working with living things, which is why I wouldn't separate, are they employees, or I'm tending God's garden. So this organization is part of God's garden. These people are part of His flock. How do I tend what's been entrusted to me in ways that honor His laws of life and produce a rich harvest? Now, here's something that's really interesting, that when Jesus built His team, you see His team is growing, transformation, you see community, you see multiplication, which, by the way, only living things multiply, dead things don't. I can make 100 chairs and leave them, and I'll come back in 2 years and it's still 100 chairs. If I have 100 sheep and they all get scattered and they go out, and if some, you know, there may be 200 when it's done. So the only living things will reproduce, and that's when I want to produce reproducing things, and then you get skills in ministry, deep commitment. But look at His paradigm. This is the paradigm He used. The kingdom of heaven is like a sower. Kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Parable of the lost sheep, sheep and goats, vine and branches. What was Jesus's profession that He was trained in? Okay. Now, normally when you give illustrations, you pull from your experience, like people who were motorcycle drivers tell motorcycle illustrations. People who are pilots tell air illustrations. How many building illustrations do you hear from Jesus?
Two or three.
Yeah, not very many, right? The kingdom of heaven is like building a table. You first measure all the pieces and make sure they're the right length. And then you cut them, and then you make sure that you glue them carefully together. He doesn't say that. But that was what his experience was. The kingdom of heaven is like taking a stone and chipping all the edges off until it's square and putting it in. Now, you say there were a couple, but actually it's important to listen carefully to the couple. The kingdom of heaven is like a house on the rock. Did I quote that correctly? What does it say? The kingdom of heaven is like what? A man who built his house on the rock. So the kingdom's like the man, not the house on the rock. The kingdom of heaven is like a pearl of great price. The kingdom of heaven is like a merchant who found a pearl of great price. And you'll find even in the illustrations that you expect to be factory illustrations, to be illustrations of dead things, he always is talking about illustrations of live things. So the kingdom of heaven is something living. So I have to think in organic ways as I think about leadership. Now we go back into this question of farm leadership. Here's some questions about, so how do you recruit new team members? I had someone from Poland visit me, and he said, how do you find your people on your team? How do you find them? Because every one of them I met, they're just incredible. They're gifted, they're articulate, and they seem to be all going, so how do you find them? And I said, you don't find people like that. You don't find them, you grow them. You don't find them, you grow them. And so how do you grow people? Sometimes we're always thinking about how do we find the kind of person we want, but how do we grow the kind of people we want? So you have to think about some people I'm working with right now, I knew them when they were teenagers and was investing in their life when they were 17. And grow, and now they're just amazing, amazing servants of God that are just astounding. But you grow your team. And so you have to be thinking about who people are becoming and how you're investing them and how you're preparing them for the future. How do you recruit new team members? You also recruit them in farm-like ways. So have you ever heard sports teams, they sometimes talk about their farm teams? Which means if I want professional players, I have to have a team for 10-year-olds. Because there has to be kind of steps going up. So sometimes we go, how do I find someone full-time staff? Well, how do you create these steps that are going up where people grow to the place where that step is just one step? It's not, I'm not gonna leave all my life. So we have something where, you know, you can come and spend a weekend with us and then do something with us for a week. And then you could spend 3 months in an internship. And then, and you see, you just go like this, and you start with a group of a lot of people because, well, it's easy to say, would you come do something with us for a day? We're going to equip you. That's a low bar. That's that farm team. And then from there, you challenge them another step. And then pretty soon, you say, would you come on our team full time? Well, it's not, oh, yeah, I mean, I actually have almost been doing this now. You see? And then there's this one more step in. And so if you can farm up your staff and figure out how do we do something here and something here to where that last step is just a small step, then oh yeah, that makes sense. So another thing is how do you finance them? Well, you farm your resources too. You don't go out and say, oh, we need some money. Are you, Philip, are you rich? Do you give money away? Because like we need some of that money you're giving away. Could I talk to you after? Okay, how's that going to go? It's not going to go real well. But if I say, Philip, we got a vision. I would love for you to see what we're doing. Come and see, and we can have dinner together, and then we talk about it, and then I might say, Philip, have you ever thought about how, we have a kid that could go to camp. It'll cost 100 euros. Would you? I'm looking for someone who'd sponsor so-and-so to camp. And then Philip gives that. And then after camp, I come, Philip, I got to tell you what happened with that kid. This is what happened. Here's a picture of him. Well, next time he might give 1,000 euros, or next time he might give 10,000 euros, or he might give 100 euros every year for that. But you see how I'm cultivating this relationship and cultivating his vision. And it's about, but it's really about the kingdom. It's not just about getting money from his pocket to my pocket. We're part of this vision of what God's doing. And I'm wondering if maybe God would invite him in. You see how this whole mentality plays out in the way? And then you farm your resources. And what happens is, I experienced this more times up. So this is back to the resource question. But I experienced this just a couple weeks ago. Actually, there was we were doing a Ukraine response, and I was going through a list and saw somebody's name on the list. And I went, oh, I got to call this guy and say thank you because I'm so grateful for his gift. And I thought, no, I'll just write him an email. So I wrote him an email and said, thank you for giving. And he wrote me back and he says, I actually didn't give. And I go back to the list and I'd read the name wrong. Oh, darn it. So I wrote him back and I said, Hal, I am so sorry. He says, no, but I really want to know about what you're doing. So I sent him a note. And he says, that's great. I'm sending in $50,000. Okay, now part of it is, Hal's a friend of mine. I've known him for a while. He's been involved in other things. His first gift to our ministry was quite small. But we've been cultivating this kingdom relationship where we're involved in serving God together, and it's enriching for me. It's enriching for him. So about 3 or 4 weeks later, I went, I got to tell Hal thank you because that was just so amazing. So I said, can we Skype? And I got him on Skype. I showed him pictures of what he's done and said, you were part of this. I mean, you did this. You see how I'm putting back into the soil? You know, so I'm not just taking from the soil, just go out there, see what I can find. No, I'm enriching the soil of his vision and things like that. I got done and he said, you're doing that? When I explained, I said, yeah. He said, what's that costing you? And I told him, and he goes, oh, my gift didn't go very far. I'll send in another $150,000. Send in $150,000. I didn't even ask him for that. I was thanking him. So that's kind of an extreme example, but you see, basically my focus is how do I take care of Hal? How do I build into Hal? How do I make this experience incredible, wonderful for Hal? And we're doing amazing things together. And then in the process of that cultivation, there's this enriching resources. One of the things in organic systems is actually resources increase rather than decrease because you grow them and they grow with you. And then you can have sustainable models of financing. And we're done.